Hi, this is Danielle from The Jealous Curator, and this is episode 67 of Art for Your Ear. This episode is supported by Saatchi Art, the world's largest curated online gallery offering original art by independent artists from around the world. You can pop over and visit them at saatchiart.com. Also, the lovely people at audible.com have given me my own link so that I can offer you guys a free book along with a 30-day trial. Pop over to audibletrial.com/jealouscurator to pick up whichever book you like. My new book, Your Inner Critic is a Big Jerk, is coming out in audio form on October 25th, which is totally exciting and kind of surreal to me. Anywho, on with the show. We are calling Australia again. Last week, I talked to Melbourne-based Sandra Aterovich, and after the call, she told me I had to get sculptor Kate Rode on the podcast. I had just written about her insanely colorful, fairly weird vessels just a couple of weeks ago, and then after Sandra's glowing review, I figured I'd be a fool not to reach out and invite her. And luckily, she said yes. So, let's call Kate. And I have a feeling she won't be alone. Let's find out. Calling Melbourne. Hi, Kate.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
Good. So I may have heard through the rumor mill that you have a new baby.
It's true, and he's sitting on me right now.
Isn't that always the way? Four and a half months?
4.5 months old.
Oh my goodness, that's so squishy and cute and exciting. Well, we're going to have to get into that because I'm going to have to ask you if you're making any work right now, but we'll loop back around to that. Yeah. So I wrote about you just the other day, actually. And then last week, I was speaking to another artist from Melbourne, Sandra Aterovich. And she, after we were done recording, she said, oh, I saw that you just wrote about Kate Rode. You need to get her on the podcast because she has the best story. And so,
it's not a compliment.
Yeah, and so a couple days later, here we are. So I am so excited I love your work, obviously. I just wrote about you, but now I want to hear all the background and how you make what you make and why and your story. So I always like to just go back to the beginning and ask if you were one of those art kids back in the day.
Well, yes, I was. I come from a very arty family. My parents are both tradespeople, but I guess that at the core of being a tradesperson is that you do things with your hands. Mm. So I was always, doing little, drawing projects, and I had this. I went through a pipe cleaner horse sculpture phase, and I was making more and more elaborate pipe cleaner horses, and I think I had a pretty crazy imagination because I do have a brother, but he's 8 years younger than me, so I was effectively an only child for 8 years.
Yeah,
and so I had to entertain myself a lot, and So I'd do all these projects and I'd invent all these little fantasy sort of stories and worlds for my pipe cleaner horses. And
Did you have any unicorns in the stable?
Unicorns just weren't on my radar then. It's hard to believe. But if I was a kid now, it'd be all unicorns.
you can do one under glass now.
Yes, that's right.
and were your parents, I guess they were totally into it?
Look, they encouraged it to the extent that it seemed to keep me occupied. I don't think they necessarily thought of it as a vocational path, but they never expressed any dismay when I announced my intentions to go to art school. I think ultimately they'd fallen into their careers because they didn't have options. They had to leave school and be apprentices and work from a very young age, and so their hope for me and my brother was just that we did what made us happy. And I guess they just were quietly praying that either we'd change our minds or that somehow we'd get through it and be okay.
What did your brother end up doing?
Well, my brother he actually went to art school as well, but he took a slightly more commercial path, and he is a real estate photographer these days.
Oh my gosh, that's crazy. I thought maybe you were saying that your parents were hoping that you would decide at some point to drop out and become a lawyer or a doctor or something.
Absolutely, yeah. Look, I really think that they had hoped, but they did send my brother and I to a fairly fancy private school in the hopes that we'd, you know, be encouraged to do something like that, and it totally backfired on them. Probably would have been better off. The closest school to where we lived was actually a very alternative hippie type school. I think they should have sent us there.
And then you would have rebelled against that and
become lawyers.
Yeah, that's right. Well, it's so funny because my mom is an artist and my dad is a PhD scientist. And then I went off to art school and my sister is a lawyer.
Wow.
Yeah, and then my brother is a landscape designer. So yeah, it was, I don't know.
You got a good balance.
Yeah, they got one of each in there. So yeah. Okay, so you announced that you're going off to art school.
Yes. And I was very lucky that I got into what's considered, you know, one of the best art schools in Melbourne, my hometown. But I was very, you know, I was very green and I hadn't grown up. I grew up in the outer suburbs of Melbourne, which is pretty uncool. And you're not necessarily exposed to, you know, the city, I guess the really happening sort of contemporary art and that sort of stuff. So it was, even though I'd managed to sort of get into this art school, I still had quite a big learning curve ahead of me. So the art school years, they started out fairly tough, but they got better as I spent more time in town seeing things and getting my head around the whole art scene.
Mm-hmm. I can hear you rubbing his back. Are you rubbing his back?
I am rubbing his back.
Oh, that was my favorite part, those tiny little backs.
Yes, he's all squishy and cute.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Okay, I'm going to try and control my ovaries right now and keep talking to you. So when you went to art school, what did you make? Has it always been sculpture for you, or did you start in something else?
Well, I actually majored in painting, surprisingly.
Oh, yeah.
And I spent the first year and a half of my degree pretty much just painting. And then I got a part-time job as an artist's assistant doing painting. So I had quite a good talent for photoreal style painting.
Mm-hmm.
And a few other students and myself, we worked for a very well-established painter as his assistants doing, he had operated what I guess is called like the sort of European style studio that he's like the sort of master, the designer in charge, and he would give us paintings to do and we would execute the paintings for him to his specifications. And so I was doing this work and because there were several of us working on them, but it all had to have a very uniform look. There was quite a, a kind of style, a way that you had to work. And after a while, it totally destroyed my personal, desire to paint. And 'cause I'd sit down to paint and I'd start painting in the, you know, the work style, which was not really the same as my personal style, but you couldn't kind of help but fall into it. So I really turned to sculpture because I thought, look, I'm going to go insane or I just can't paint myself anymore. So I've got to do something else. And I sort of started just playing around with different 3D things. And luckily, the art school I was at, they're very open to working across different platforms, even if technically you're, you know, doing a painting major.
Mm-hmm. They must have seen your pipe cleaner horses and let you into the sculpture department.
Yeah. Yeah, they were like, we've heard a rumor that you made these awesome, ambitious pipe cleaner horses as a child, so we think you've got it.
And so what, did you just instantly love it?
I did, and I think, I guess I really like the tactile quality. So the first materials that I started working with in sculpture were textiles, were things like fake fur and lots of just fabrics and things. So I didn't really, apart from, you know, working with pipe cleaners, I hadn't had much training in, I didn't really know how to use any of the really traditional heavy sculptural mediums. I didn't know how to weld or do any of that stuff, or even, you know, woodworking type stuff. I just had no experience. So it was a matter of starting with something more familiar, which was the craft textile things, and finding my way through it.
Mm-hmm. Did you have a desire to like learn the welding and all of that stuff, or was that not really your jam?
Not at that time. Whereas now I've come round to it.
Yeah.
And I've certainly over the years, I guess it was always a matter of what am I trying to achieve? And then it was like, well, how am I going to, what materials do I need to do it? So gradually it started off by using the drill and then the jigsaw and working my way through that woodworking repertoire and then onto, a bit of metal and so it was sort of there's a need and so I have to, learn the skill.
Mm-hmm. And so did you slowly just leave painting behind?
Yeah, I did. Although I actually, the early works that I made immediately sort of at the end of art school and just the few years out of it were a little bit of a combination. So I'd always loved museum dioramas. Melbourne Museum, the old Melbourne Museum, was this really wonderful Victorian, really creepy, very brown and, my memory of it is very brown and dark and, the old school painted backgrounds and then the taxidermy. And so I started making like little versions of those works, and so they still had the painted backgrounds.
Mm-hmm.
And when I went to the American Natural History Museum, my brain just about exploded out of my mind seeing those incredible dioramas. But so I still combined a little bit of painting and sculpture, and it wasn't until a few years out that I just realized that I didn't need to paint or didn't want to try and integrate painting into it anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you sort of found a life of its own, really, I guess.
Yeah, I guess I sort of felt that I sculpturally I was sort of doing what I wanted to do, so I didn't need to have painting anymore. But I still love painting, and I mean, some of my favorite artworks are paintings, but I just find sculpture's my thing.
Yeah, well, it's so funny, everyone I talk to, so many people went to art school for painting.
Yes.
Because I think that's what you think you're supposed to go to art school for.
And look, too, I mean, my experience at high school when I was building my folio was because we weren't like a particularly arty school, because, remember, it's the lawyer training school. Training school. is that the only things we were given the opportunity to work on was sort of drawing and painting, and sculpture was a bit, a little bit dangerous, a little bit outside the realms. And we effectively just looked at sculpture at painting the whole time when we were, doing our theory work as well. So
right.
That was just what we're exposed to, really.
Mm-hmm. And I think that goes for a lot of high schools, like unless you're at an art high school. So I think that's the same thing. I went for painting. So, and I probably shouldn't have, but I didn't know that was art to me. So off I went. And so how was your art experience, your art school experience?
Well, look, it was the first year was pretty rough. I had a quaint sort of array of interests that didn't necessarily align with the art school kind of ideal. So I was very interested in work. I was very interested in illustration.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess not typical fine art sort of artists. And it was a lot of the lecturers in the painting department, they were from that 80s, that very big painting expressionist sort of movement. So they didn't really get my dainty little kind of paintings that I was
mm-hmm.
doing. And I mean, some of them in the first year, one lecturer told me that I should basically stop, wasting space there and think about doing something else. And it was very tough having those criticisms, but it also makes you stop and ask yourself, the questions, like, do I want to be here? And I realized that, yes, this is, you know, one way or another, I do want to be here and I do want to find my way through this. And luckily, there was another lecturer who was very, you know, encouraging, and he just said, you know, just keep going and you'll be fine. You know, you're here. I see you turn up every day, you know, like half the students here, I only see them like once every 2 weeks.
Yeah.
You know, like the odds are good for you, you know, like just hang in there. Yeah, sorry, Tristan's having a little, wine.
Has he had enough of this podcast?
He's like, shut up, Mommy.
He's like, come on, are we really doing this?
I'm just going to see if he's needs to go. He might just need to go on the floor because I've been holding him. And he seems, he's wriggly.
Oh, yeah.
He's wriggly. All right. He's on the floor. I'm giving him his soft toy and he's okay for the moment.
Okay.
So yes. All right.
Motherhood and being an artist. Here we go. This is it in action. I love it. Okay, so yeah, when you got into the sculpture thing and sort of left painting behind, did you feel like, oh, okay, here we go, this is my thing?
Yeah, definitely. And I think because I didn't have that background in sculpture, it was like everything was new. And so I was really excited to be working with all these new materials. And also about that time, everyone's attitude at like the lecturers and even the other students, like their kind of attitude became a lot more positive towards what I was doing. So that kind of feedback sort of also helped. It wasn't the, you know, the essential thing because I was enjoying using the materials so much, but it was an interesting shift in everyone's opinions about what I was doing at that time.
Mm-hmm. And encouragement doesn't hurt at all.
No, definitely.
And so coming out of school, what was your plan? Like, did you want to be a full-time artist when you came out? What did you think you were going to do?
Well, look, I certainly, you know, the end goal was to be a full-time artist, although in Australia it's extremely difficult in a lot of respects. But I sort of felt that, look, it won't be, you know, in the next sort of year or 5 years, but maybe, you know, down the line, if I just persist, it will become a reality. So I was very realistic when I was finishing up at art school. A lot of other students somehow had very delusionally believed that they'd leave art school and they'd just be professional full-time artists. I don't know what they were listening to or who told them that. Certainly no one told me that, and I was very real about what the future would be. And so I was fortunate that as I was finishing up, my high school art teacher got in touch with me and said, look, there's this job at your old high school that's a part-time job being a support person for the art department. And so I got this job, and I mean, I actually have kept doing this job for 15 years.
Wow.
As a part-time thing. And I mean, it's sort of the idea, look, if it's the ideal job for someone who's an artist as well, because we get 3 months of school holidays.
Yeah.
And then they were very flexible. It was 3 days a week. And if I needed to go away or even if I needed to take a longer time out, they were always willing to allow me that. So, you know, so I never intended it to be the, you know, the fallback sort of position, but it just turned out to be the perfect thing.
Yeah, that is literally perfect.
So I've worked at this school, and when I started, I thought, oh, look, I'll do this job part-time and I'll do my artwork part-time, and in about, you know, 3 years I'll crack and I'll go back to uni and I'll be a lawyer, you know.
Yeah.
I'll do that law degree or some other really useful type vocationally orientated work. So that was my plan. But I was really extremely lucky that within 6 months of leaving art school, I was, you know, doing making work all the time. I'd gotten a little studio in the city, and I was showing up in Sydney, and I mean, to me, to go up to Sydney was like, oh, that's so exciting to show in a little artist-run space in Sydney. But it was actually at this little showing in Sydney that I crossed paths with an art dealer who was setting up a new gallery. And he amazingly, you know, was really quite taken with this work that I was making. And the day after I met him, he emailed me and said, look, I want you to put some work in a group show that I'm doing. And I mean, I couldn't quite believe it, because a lot of the artists he was showing were like my, you know, my lecturers at uni or artists that I just really admire. And I'm like, wow, I can't believe that I'm in this position, like 6 months out of art school. So falling in with his gallery at that time was like, was the real, you know, career launcher in a way. It got me off that sort of bottom rung of the ladder, and it just got a little bit of, you know, momentum behind things.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, that's crazy. And so you were you just like pinching yourself?
I just was like, you know, and he had this beautiful gallery in Paddington, which is a particularly, you know, lovely part of Sydney. And I just remember walking down the street to his gallery and being like, I can't believe this. It's like, you know, it's not real.
Wow. And so was your work only at that gallery, or did you start going to other galleries, or was he sort of your main rep?
He sort of started out as my main dealer man.
Yeah.
So I was in this group show, and when he'd seen this one particular work, which was sort of one of those little quirky little museum-y diorama works I talked of earlier, he was like, oh, so do you have a lot of other work that you could show? And I actually, like, did not at the time, but I lied. And I was like, oh, yeah, I've got, like, you know, so much work. So, you know, that confidence thing, you know, a bit of, like, pretend fake, you know, what is it, fake it till you make it?
Yeah.
And so there was a 6-week deadline to the group show at his gallery, and I just went back home and just worked like a crazy maniac getting it all together. And then in that group show, you know, a few notable Australian collectors bought some pieces, and so he then gave me my own show. So for the first couple of years I mostly was showing with him, but because his was a very buzzy, you know, respected gallery, a lot of curators would go there, so it got things moving, that people would come and they would, you know, it just gets you in a position where you're getting invited to be in other shows in other, you know, small institutional galleries, or, you know, there's hit stacks of regional galleries, really fantastic regional galleries all around Australia. And just having things constantly out on loan, being seen, it just helps.
My God, how old were you?
So I was 22 at this time.
Oh my God. I finished art school and moved home to my parents' basement when I was 22.
Well, look, I was still living with my parents.
But still, like, that's the dream.
Yeah. So yeah, it was amazing. It was incredible to have that happen.
Well, you're super talented. It's not a fluke, but it is right place, right time. Like, it's so great that, you know, you went up there and, like, you know, stars align sometimes.
Well, yes. Yeah. And I mean, look, that's what I sort of, you know, often people have said, how do you get started? And I'm like, look, it was a little bit of luck, you know, a little bit of right place, right time. But then, you know, when he said to me, do you have heaps more work? And I was like, no, I didn't, but I was just like, yeah, I can, you know, but making it, just doing it, then doing all that work.
Yeah. Tina Fey has a quote that's just say yes and figure it out later.
Yeah.
And I kind of, I totally do that too, because it's like, yeah, you don't want to miss that opportunity. And so how many pieces, when you went back there for 6 weeks back home, how much more work did you make?
Well, somehow I had all that youthful energy, so I somehow managed to just do, like, you know, I it was quite a substantial installation. It was, you know, numerous pieces, like probably, you know, 30 small pieces.
Oh my gosh.
And I would just go home and like, I'd just go to work and then come home and just be, or go to the studio and just be working. But the way I worked there, it was much simpler. At that time, I was using a lot of paper mache, which is quite a, you know, relatively fast, you know, armatures, chicken wire armatures and paper mache and just little painted elements and things. So it was a lot faster than the work I do now.
Were you just like, were you so excited? Were you exhausted or were you just so excited that you just wanted to keep making stuff?
I just wanted, I think I knew that if I pulled this off, that this was going to really, you know, make my career just take off.
Yeah.
So I just was filled with that, you know, ambition and that drive and the energy and
yeah. Oh, yeah. 22. Such good memories.
Yeah.
So then what happened after that? So just things just, did they just keep going?
Yeah, like, so for the first, I guess, you know, 10 years or so, so I was working, you know, doing sort of regular shows with this gallery in Sydney. And then because of being with him, I was getting included into a number of, you know, like shows at smaller institutions. I was being acquired by a number of like galleries, like National Gallery of Victoria and a number of good regional galleries like Newcastle Region Art Gallery. So it was just like, you know, the money was sort of like not rolling in, but you know, it was coming in a steady trickle and I was able to make more and more ambitious work. So things were going, you know, really sort of well. And then around about, I guess around about 2009, that gallery, it suddenly closed down.
Oh.
And I'd been in a big show at the Art Gallery of South Australia. I'd had sort of this amazing year, like 2008 was this incredible year where I had a residency in Paris, I had a residency in Japan. I was in this show at the Art Gallery of South Australia, which is the big institution of you know, Adelaide, South Australia. And I was also invited to do a big solo project at a small sort of private institutional gallery in the Yarra Valley outside of Melbourne. So it was just like, you know, it was like, you know, one hit after another. Oh, and I was also like in this year invited to do a show in Lithuania and they flew me over there, you know. Like,
oh, my God.
Twice. I was like flown to Europe two times.
Go 2008.
And yeah, it was just like this absolutely, you know, kick-ass kind of year.
Oh, my God.
And I guess it's a bit like, you know, you have these amazing – and look, that's what I sort of now, you know, kind of 15 years into working in this field, you have these kind of peaks and, you know, not necessarily troughs, but it's like you have this incredible momentum, but it just – then it sort of slows down for a while. And I kind of had – you know, and then, you know, my gallery that I started with closed down and I was just like, oh, you know, I guess all the time you're saying, is it over? Is it finished? You know, is the ride ending, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And luckily just a little bit before this gallery in Sydney closed, I'd started showing with a Melbourne commercial gallery as well. So I had that to fall back on, but I had that as something, so it wasn't all ending necessarily, but it just sort of then it kind of went into a slightly slower kind of time, and you know, I wasn't jumping on a plane every 5 minutes to some amazing exotic destination.
Mm-hmm. And so did you feel panicked about that, or were you kind of just enjoying the lull? Or
look, the lull was kind of good because, I mean, even though all that traveling is amazing, it's also very disruptive to your, you know, your sort of schedule and your production and all that sort of stuff. So it is good to have those quiet times as well. But I think, you know, it's amazing that I've been doing this all these years now and I still don't quite believe that it's going to keep going. Like, I'm like, at some point it's going to end, you know, it's just going to end. But I just keep making work and it keeps going. So I guess
yeah.
I'm just going to have, you know, I'm just like, look, it's like, yeah, you just do the work and whatever happens, happens.
Yeah, that's the thing, right? You just have to keep going in the studio every day. And what's really cool about your work too, and I think for all successful artists or successful people in general, is evolving like that, right? You know, if you keep doing the same thing that you were doing 15 years ago, you know, it probably won't work, but you just have evolved and you've experimented and played and it's led you down this path or this path. And that is my perfect segue into resin.
Yes. Yeah.
You like how I did that?
Yeah. Well, very good.
Thank you. So how did you start playing around with resin? I am fascinated with it and I'm so scared to do it.
Well, look, I was fascinated and I felt the fear and I did it anyway.
Yeah.
So look, when I was at art school, a few of the sculpture students were doing little resin pieces and I was very fascinated. I've always had a little fascination for anything that's transparent. I don't know what, I mean, I've often said to people, I think I'm a little bit on the, you know, on the Asperger's kind of a chart or something. Yeah. Like I have these weird fascinations. I'm just, you know, slightly on it. Like a little bit more
on
than
the edge, yeah. So, I think we probably all are on there somewhere.
I think all artists are.
Yeah, yeah.
In some form or another. So I was fascinated with this clear material. And one of the sculpture students, when I was doing my honors year, she just gave me a very basic intro into how to make molds and how to use resin. And I then went off and just started playing around. So initially I was making very tiny things and not actually being particularly successful at it. But I mean, one of the things is that often you start working with a particular material and years later you're like, that was like the worst material possible I could have used. So there's several kinds of resin, and the one I was working with was the stinkiest, most, you know, awful, toxic one, like
polyester. See, that's what I think. I tried it once and I was like, this is a stinky mess. Like,
yes. Yeah. So, yeah. So now I use some different ones that don't have that same level of stinkness and are much, I think, much more predictably easy to work with. Mm. So I really just was, you know, experimenting on this small scale, and then I'm the kind of person, I do like these little experiments, and then I'm like, okay, well, let's just jump right off the deep end and do the, you know, the most complex, biggest possible thing. So I started making these big resin sort of display cabinets for these mixed media diorama works I was making. And like the original ones, they are so heavy because I was just literally casting these solid big blocks of like resin, really. And nowadays I'm like, oh my gosh, I mean, certainly I would do it all different, but that's the learning curve. And you have to do that really to, you know, to get to the place I am now.
Yeah. That's how you become an expert.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, and now I can advise other people to not do that.
Yeah.
So go about it in a different way. But it's just the most, you know, I mean, I just love it. It's the most versatile. For me, it's just such a, to me, I find it's an incredibly forgiving material and it has a lot of potential to be worked in very experimental ways. And it's a lot of fun.
Yeah. And you can, I guess, if you can make a mold, you can make whatever you want.
Well, yeah, and you can do, you know, you can do things as a bit of a little addition, or, you know, the mold, you can use it for lots of different materials and things. So, you know, you could use it for doing lost wax casting as well. So it's got lots of, you know, the actual investment in making the mold is the main thing, really. So once you've got the mold, you know, you want to get a lot of usage out of it.
right. And your colors are amazing. And I thought, when it was funny when you said that you like things that are, you know, you can see through, like that kind of your work, when I found it, whatever, 2 weeks ago, it looks like candy.
Yes.
You know, because you can kind of see through it, but not really. But then your colors are literally insane. And so do you have to, this is how little I know about resin, do you have to dye Because resin clear a new diet, or how did?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes. So it comes as a liquid. So the kind that I use, it comes as like a two part kit, and you then can use, there's specific dyes for resin, and then I also use some other, actually they're like pigments for oil painting, for mixing your own oil paints. They, some of them, not all of them, I have to do a bit of trial and error. So a couple of them do work with the resin as well, and they're in fact the really, really fluoro colors.
Oh yeah, I love those.
Are those oil painting pigments. So it's, often they're either liquid or powder, and just when you're mixing the resin, you mix them in as well.
When you first did that, were you like, hello? You must have been so excited when you got those colors.
Oh, yeah. I just went crazy when I, like, found those colors. There's a beautiful art supply shop in Melbourne that just essentially sells pigments.
Yeah.
And I found those pigments in there, and I was like, at the time I bought them, I'm like, I don't know if they're going to work, but I really hope they do. And then they did, and I was just like, oh, my God, everything just went crazy fluoro for, like, I don't think it's actually stopped, actually. It's still, like, I found them, and then I'm just like, oh, my God, everything lurid. Fluoro cream.
Yeah, I wouldn't stop either. It's so, so good. And I was actually reading, I don't know where it was. Might have been on Saatchi, actually. It was sort of your little bio thing, and there was something on there that said, reimagining natural history.
Yes.
Yeah. I loved that. I think I might title this podcast episode that, because I thought that totally nailed exactly what your work looks like. It's like this crazy, weird, dreamlike, yet you feel like you're in a weird natural history museum.
Yes. Yeah. So look, part of the background to that is that I grew up in an area of Melbourne that's about an hour from the city, and it's in a very natural, very forested area. It's the sort of one of the places that like a lot of tourists go there because there's beautiful gardens and the, you know, it's very Australian. There's lots of gum trees and there's lots of our wonderful native flora and fauna, lots of, you know, wallabies, kangaroos, koalas, they're all there. And I grew up there, and I actually, this is a terrible thing to admit, I found it terribly boring, and it's beautiful, but at the same time, it's very brown. Like, Australia has very particular colours, and they're very, like, browny green is, like, the colour of where I grew up. And, yeah. I mean, that's, like, mucky muck, you know. Like, and so I was, like, I mean, it's beautiful, and I love it, and it has some really unique aspects. But, you know, I just was like, I just think that, you know, Europe or America or Africa seems so much more interesting and, you know, exciting and colourful. And, you know, I've sort of changed my tune. I've come to see, you know, my home where I grew up and other parts of Australia as equally as beautiful and fascinating. But that was what started me down that path of, you know, reimagining natural history, is that I'm like, why are all our animals, they're green? And they're also like, to me, like, everyone thinks Australian fauna is so dangerous. I'm like, look, it's really like so, I mean, particularly where I grew up, I'm like, it's so benign. I mean, you know, in America, you have to watch out for like bears and things. And, you know, like, I can just walk through this forest and, you know, like nothing, like I'm probably more in danger of being hit by a falling gum tree branch or something.
What about sharks though? They're not just swimming around
Like, we have those, but I don't know. I just feel like it's so unlikely that, I mean, particularly, you know, in Melbourne, it's pretty cold. The snakes are really, you know, they're pretty slow most of the year because it's just too cold.
Well, I live in Canada, and, you know, my son was all scared. We were talking about going to Australia for something, and my son was scared because he's like, there's everything there can kill you. Yeah. And I said, but people think that in Canada, like, you know, that there's just bears wandering around. And I said, have you ever seen a bear?
Yeah.
And he was like, no. And then I kid you not, like a week later, there was a huge mound of bear poo in our backyard. And I was like, oh my God, there actually are bears wandering around. So you be careful out there. Don't go, you'll go wandering under any gum trees that might fall on you with a snake attached or something. But so you wanted everything to be fluorescent and not brown and green and
Yeah, basically, yeah. I just wanted everything to be like way more bright and colorful and interesting than it was.
Well, it's funny actually when you mentioned that Natural History Museum, you said your memories of it are brown.
Well, yes, but I guess it was very sort of brown, but then the dioramas were like the action and the
light,
the center of it, yeah.
Is he laughing away down there, or is he sad?
He's just started having a little sad face.
Oh,
so
dear.
I might pick him up again, okay. And hopefully that'll... He's had his alone wriggle time.
Oh, my goodness. Hi.
Now he's laughing.
Oh, well, sure. It's either hilarious or disastrous.
Yeah, it's like he's like, I don't know whether I'm happier. Am I happier or am I sad?
A little bit of both. Okay, well, let's talk about that. How are things going being a new mom? And are you taking a little chunk of time off? Or are you actually making things right now?
Well, I'm still amazingly getting a little bit of work done. I'm on maternity leave from my job at the school.
Mm-hmm.
For the year, and I get little snatches of time when he's napping. Now that he's a few months old, he's a bit more of a consistent napper.
Yeah.
So I can, you know, like yesterday I actually got like an hour and a half of time to myself, and
wow.
And then in the evenings he has like a good, you know, evening sort of sleep. So I really just have to be, it's been very good in a lot of ways, because you definitely stop procrastinating when your time is that limited and you just get right into and right onto what you've got to do.
Yeah, so many women have said that, like, yeah, you just, you don't waste time. If you know you've got an hour and a half, it's like, let's get going.
Yeah, definitely. Like in the past, you know, pre-baby, I would have just been like, oh, well, I'll just have a cup of tea and, you know, read the, you know, book for a while and take my sweet time. Whereas now I'm like, okay, right, all right, I've got to do this, this, and this. And, you know, I've got like, and I mean, like, that's the thing, is that he might have a good nap or he might not. So you've just got to start and get as much done as you can.
I know. I always hated that day, those days when you put him down and then 20 minutes later. Yeah. Oh, come on. And when Charlie turned 5 months, he started doing 2 2-hour naps a day.
Oh, wow.
Like clockwork. I was a new woman. It was fantastic. So maybe he's going that route.
I'm hoping, yeah, definitely hoping that that's the way it's going.
Yeah, I love that. And so do you have a studio in your house then?
I do. I live and work in the same space, which
oh,
is
perfect.
Quite a sort of warehousey type space, which is great. So it can handle my messiness so I've got a sort of upstairs living area and a downstairs working area.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's great. Because yeah, it's hard if the studio's out of your house, because you can't just pop out like you know. You need
well,
to
that's
be able
right.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah.
So it's great that, you know, I can just walk downstairs and get stuff going.
Yeah. And so what is going on with you right now then? So you're taking that leave from the school. But as far as showing and all that stuff, like what's going on right now?
Well, I've got a show booked in for the end of the year at a gallery in Melbourne, a little institutional gallery, and it's I'm doing a small amount of new work for that, but I'm mostly, it's a baby survey show, really. So it's actually looking back over the past 15 years of working.
Wow.
Which is really exciting. And we just found out that we got some funding for it, so we can make it really spectacular now. And one of the main components of it is, surprisingly, I've been designing some wallpaper for it, which is a bit of a new direction as well. So I'm doing these wallpaper designs, which actually works in really well with having a baby, because it's stuff that can be done on the computer, you know, just fiddling around on the computer. So it's great for just, you know, when he's even not sleeping, that I can just sit there and move a few things around.
Yeah, yeah. Oh my gosh. So when is this show?
So this is in early December. I think December 9th, in fact, is the official start date.
Yeah, that'll be here in a heartbeat.
It will.
Yeah. Well, give me all the info. Every time I do a podcast episode, I do a great big post. And so I can show all of your work. And so I'll put that in as a link so that people can go.
Excellent.
Oh, that's so exciting. And so I guess, are you making new work too?
Well, I'm making one new large sculptural work. And part of the budget for the funding that we just got is actually so that I can have an assistant for a few months to help me sort of produce things, which is really good. But a lot of the work, luckily, we're able to loan it from private collections, and so it's good. It's just really a matter of coming up with a display concept, and
which is so cool because your work is displays. It's like displays of displays.
Yes, yeah. So we've just got to work out how to display the display.
Oh my gosh, I love that. Okay, well, while I'm thinking of that, you know what else I love is your displays under glass, like under the bell jars.
Oh yes, yeah.
Are you still making those, or is that older work?
I haven't made those for a while. So that was kind of, in a way, that was sort of the end point of that museum diorama work to a large extent. So up till about 2010, I was working. So this is, all right, I'm just going to warn you, this is a bit of a mass diversionary story.
Okay, I love it. if Tristan lets us do it, we're good.
So I was, you know, working purely in the fine art realm and I'd sort of had contemplated doing some other things, but I never really had time to pursue them. And then I crossed paths with these Australian fashion designers called Romance Was Born, who are Luke Sales and Anna Plunkett, and they're based in Sydney. And they're kind of renowned as these extremely crazy, over-the-top fashion designers, very colourful, very, really fun stuff. And they were still relatively new in their careers as fashion designers, and they have built a real reputation for working with artists to create really original patterns and designs. They work with a lot of Australian contemporary artists as well as some international people, and so they invited me to collaborate with them on a collection called Renaissance Dinosaur.
Oh my gosh, I love that.
It's, you know, what a great, and, you know, and they're quite famous for doing these crazy themes as well. So just before I worked with them, it had been, their theme had effectively been grandmothers under the sea. So it's pretty wild. And they just said, look, can you make these, a couple of like sculptures for us and some jewellery? And so I was really excited to work with them because I think, you know, that we'd never really spoken, but I'd seen their work and I love their work. So I was just really excited to do this work with them. So they came up with a few textile patterns that collaged my work together, and we ultimately made it into a wallpaper. And so that's what kind of sparked this whole wallpaper idea. But then it also led to me making jewellery and then sort of going down this slightly different design path as well. So it's sort of opened the door. And also that was a bit of a lull in the, you know, like a lot of, that was sort of the first point where I was beginning to think, is my art career over? Am I finished? Am I done? You know, what's happening? And sort of having a bit of a, you know, crisis of confidence. And really that opened the door. So I made some jewellery for them, and then I actually started making jewellery as a bit of an ongoing, you know, small, you know, extra money supplementing type thing. And then I started to make the vessels, which is what I've kind of has become my art now, began really from doing that work with Romance Was Born. Again, it's just, you know, one thing leads to another. And yeah. You know, so when I was making these little bowls and selling them, my Melbourne gallery, it didn't shut down, but they had to move, and they actually shut for over a year. So I was like, what am I going to, you know, do for this year to make money? And so I won't be having a show at this place. And so I started doing these vases instead. And that's just, when I was just thinking, I'm just basically a vase, you know, a bowl maker. I'm not an artist anymore. And then, you know, lo and behold, they get included in this huge, there was a big survey show at the National Gallery of Victoria, just looking at art, design, architecture, fashion in Melbourne, and they got included in that. So just when I'm thinking, oh, I'm just a wacky bowl maker, it's like, you know, it's like, no, wait, there's still people still like think these are like interesting and worthy and good. And so it's like never, I guess, discount what might seem like a small opportunity or not necessarily the opportunity you were, you know, hoping for or something.
I know what you mean. Yeah. I think it's so, it's kind of back to that say yes and figure it out later in a way, because if you just keep making work that you are enjoying making, I know those lulls are so hard. I even feel like that with Jell's curator stuff, you know, it's like, it'll be go, go, go and crazy and you're flying everywhere. And then your inbox is quiet.
Yes. Yeah.
Even if your inbox is quiet for 2 weeks, it's like, oh, so am I done?
Yes.
Yeah. You know, was that it? 2 weeks ago, it all finished up, I guess, you know, and then 3 weeks later you get some other crazy email and away you go again. But you have, yeah, it's that confidence of pushing forward through the lulls.
Yes, yeah. And so, yeah, so I was at like, you know, I was at the kind of this low, you know, low point in a way. I was doing an artist in residency program at a boarding school, and I was just thinking I was not like particularly enjoying it. I really don't actually enjoy doing that artist in residence stuff, but again, it's a good source of income. Yeah. So I pushed through the pain barrier, and I was sort of sitting there going, oh, it's, you know, I'm like just hating this, and I'm at this boarding school, and you know, I was like eating the boarding school food, maybe that's what was not helping. And then I got an email, pops into my inbox, you know, you're in this amazing show with, like, you know, everyone that you sort of know in Melbourne is in, and that you thought you weren't going to be in, and it's all happening, and it's not in actually in the art section, it's in the design section, but you're in still, you know, you're there.
Yeah. I know. It's so funny. I get, you just have to know that the next thing, wouldn't it be nice if we just had like a crystal ball and you could just tell what was coming next so you could chill out?
It would be good. But then I think a lot of the excite, you know, that thrill would be gone when
it's true.
You get those moments.
It is true. But during some of those lulls, I'm like, I always say to my husband, it's the at-home audience. I'm like, oh, because you know, the at-home, the viewers at home, when you're watching the show, they know what's coming next. Like there's been, you know, other scenes that you're not in, and like they know what's coming. And I always say, I wonder what the at-home viewers are thinking. If they're like, no, don't give up. If only you knew. Yes. This is just around the corner. So I always just trust those at-home viewers that they've got my back and that the plot's going to turn.
Yeah.
Hopefully soon. Yeah. Okay. Well, before he's truly, truly done, I'm going to quickly do the not so speedy speed round.
Okay.
Okay. You ready?
Ready.
If you weren't an artist, what would you be?
Pilot.
Really?
Yeah, I am obsessed with planes and flying. I love flying.
Wow. Oh my gosh.
And one day I may still do it.
Ooh, I love that. Wow, that's impressive. I get airsick, so I would not choose that. favorite breakfast food?
Poached eggs on really good poached eggs on really good bread toast.
That's a good one. That's one of my son's favorites. The best gift you ever got?
It was my iPad. I wanted one so badly and I couldn't afford it. And my then boyfriend bought me one as a surprise gift. And as an adult, I think there isn't that much joy associated with gifts anymore.
Yeah. But
that just made me so, like, you know, I was so excited to get that iPad.
Nice. Okay. If you could only watch one movie for the rest of your life, what movie would you pick?
2001: A Space Odyssey. I it's just got so many great elements, and that trippy going through the wormhole in space scene at the end, just it's just like, I just, you know, well, it's just crazy colors and shapes and
that's right up your alley
sizes. Yeah.
I love it. That's it. That's all I was gonna ask you.
Oh,
that actually, that was the fastest speed round I've ever done. I can just tell that Tristan is like, look, lady, I have been on here for an hour and you're so lucky that I behaved.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. He's like, you've done good, Tristan.
He has done so well. I'm very, very impressed. Charlie would not have done that.
Yeah.
That would not have been on our agenda when he was 4.5 months old at all.
No, but we took him to an opening last night, actually, and everyone was like, this baby's so good. And then, like, I could see just towards the end, I'm like, I can see, all right, he's about to lose it. So let's, like, leave right now before he has a, you know, hissy fit. So we get, and then literally turned the corner and he started, like, wailing. So.
Yeah. Oh, see, look, we're done. We're done. Well, thank you so much, Kate. It was so great getting to know you and to hear your story. And I already have an excuse to write about you again, only a couple weeks later.
Yeah. Excellent.
Well, good luck and lots of love to you guys, and enjoy every single second.
Thank you.
Okay. Oh, there he goes. Okay. I will talk to you soon.
Okay.
Okay.
Bye.
Oh, I love that. There were so many important gems in there. My favorite being about pushing through the lulls. We all know about the lulls, right? Yeah. If you can enjoy them even just a tiny bit, but also know that as long as you keep on making and doing what you love, those lulls really are just that, versus the end. Dun, dun, dun. Anyway, thank you so much to Kate for talking to me. Huge thanks to Tristan for letting me take his mama's attention for almost an hour. Thank you to Saatchi Art for supporting this episode. Oh, and PS, some of Kate's work is available at saatchiart.com. I will put the full link in the post on my site, thejazzcurator.com. High fives to Audible for offering up a free book via audibletrial.com/jealouscurator. And of course, thank you for listening. There will be more art for your ear next weekend. See you then.